Hey all, it's Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you about our good friends over at Burger Master. If you know anything about me, I crave burgers in my sleep. I do not mess around. Started in 1952, Burger Master is the best burger chain in Washington State. They have locations all over the Puget Sound in Aurora, Bellevue, Everett, Mill Creek, University, and Mount Vernon. Their fresh ingredients and classic drive-in experience make them the greatest burger chain in the state of Washington. Stop by Burger Master on your way home from a Seahawks game. You won't regret it.
Hey everybody, it's Brian. If you haven't noticed, it is absolutely nuts out there in the housing market. If you don't know exactly what you're doing and you don't have someone that you trust by your side to guide you through the process, good luck getting the home you want or getting the best price for the home you're selling. John Hurlbut at Altitude Homes is a guy I've known for years, over a decade, a friend and someone I trust implicitly. If you are in Pierce, South King, or Thurston counties, there is nobody better to help guide you through the real estate process right now. Go on over to altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Now, again, that's altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Sign up to contact John. He will help you with the process, and all referrals will result in a $1,000 donation from John and the Altitude Homes team to Ben's Fund. Everybody wins. Go in there, get your help, get your dream home, get the most money for your home. AltitudeHomesTeam.com/HawkBlogger.
Hey all, Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you guys about our good friend Blake Johnson of ManifestFit.com. Football season is quickly approaching, and it is a struggle to stay in shape while eating burgers and nachos. ManifestFit.com is your one, only true online personal training service with workout and nutrition programs specifically based on your needs. They work with clients all over the U.S., and what makes Blake and ManifestFit.com so unique is that they don't believe training should be a luxury item. Now's the time to start. Head over to ManifestFit.com, click on how to join, and fill out the form. Their team will get back to you ASAP and help you start building a healthier, happier, louder stage.
The skyline is etched in my veins. You can never put that out, no matter how hard it rains.
Hello everybody and welcome to this latest episode, the bi-week episode of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser, at Hawk Blogger on Twitter, and I'm joined tonight by a rational crew. There's one member clearly missing. He is somebody who cannot handle whenever something good happens to the Seahawks because it has potentially positive implications for, you know, the head coach. And so you will not see Evan Hill tonight. He's going to take the bye week with the rest of the Seahawks and recover from watching the Seahawks win a game. But we do have a good crew here, a great crew here, to talk about a bunch of news that's broke today and about the game that happened this weekend and about the things that are coming up in the next 10 days. So let's bring them in. We'll start with Dana O'Gorman at Dana OG on Twitter. Dana, lots of stuff happening. People thought it might be a boring day, boring week, but NFL dosed up a lot of news for us today.
They did. Interestingly enough, I don't think any of it was good news for the actual NFL. This week was a little crazy. Like they had a bad PR week. Let's just put it that way. So we'll see how they recover.
Yeah, it was tough. Also, our Canadian brother, Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons. How are you doing, dude?
I'm good. I'm a little sad Evan's not here tonight because just kind of watching him going through these emotional roller coasters like the last day or two has been really fun for me. I compare him to like watching Carson Wentz play. I don't know if you guys saw the Colts play at all on Sunday. Like it was the most erratic game I've ever seen. And then Evan, like just watching him go through like the Von Miller news and then the Aaron Rodgers news. And it's been really fun for me to watch him. He can't handle success and can't handle failure. It's really fun.
Nathan, you know a little bit about that with Evan, your longest time with our fearless bearded boy. How are you doing? This is at NathanE11 on Twitter. What's going on, man?
I'm doing good. had a nice, relaxing Sunday. Seahawks were awesome pals about that. And thankfully none of the craziness that has gone on this week so far has touched the Seahawks. So, Yeah, doing good.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. It's good to see all of you. And I think there's a bunch of places we could get started. We will definitely spend some time talking about the game this weekend. We weren't able to have a post-game show for a variety of reasons, but definitely want to spend a little time talking about one of the only good games the Seahawks have played so far this year. But I think we got to start with the Russell news. I think to me, that was a big deal. Russell, for folks that have not been paying attention, got the pin removed from his finger. And according to, I think it's Pro Football Doc, I can't remember his handle, but you know, his prediction on Russell's return, even well before this, was a timeline that had him back for the Packers game. And he, when he saw the information or saw the video of Russell's, you know, I think it was an image of Russell's finger, reiterated that he thinks that's the timeline to expect him back. And, you know, I've been personally really vocal about that. I think it would be a huge, huge, huge mistake for the team to rush Russell back. But if it's the appropriate timeline, I mean, the sooner the better, like, for sure. So, Nathan, I mean, where are you? Like, what are your thoughts hearing about what's going on with Russell? Is there a part of you that's feeling like they should take it their time with him? Or are you, like, basically just hoping he's ready for the Packers game?
Yeah, I'm hoping he's ready for the Packers game. I don't know what the the long-term risk is here with getting him back on the field. And so my one thing is, and I don't know if this is remotely correct, so if there's a doctor in the house that can correct me on this, please do. But my understanding is that the recovery process from here is a little up in the air with how his finger responds and how he gets control over it again, and whether he maybe even has feeling in it for a little while. So, like, I'm still being a little cautious and trying not to get my hopes up that he's back for the Packers game. But assuming he's right and everything is good and the doctors clear him and he can hold a football and grip it and do all that stuff, grip it and rip it, then I have no concerns about getting him right back out for the Packers game.
I love the concept of him getting control of his finger again. Like, I just picture his finger, like, moving in all directions.
I don't think it gets a mind of its own necessarily. It's not possessed. Yeah. But proprioception, I think, is what it's called when you learn to use your body again after injuries. It's a real thing.
Dana, what's your take on what we're seeing so far on the Wilson front?
Well, like Nathan said, that the biggest thing was then how his finger would respond, the muscles, how well they would bend, that sort of thing. And it was very encouraging to me and to a lot of the other people. I follow this woman named Doc Flynn. She's fantastic. She's a orthopedic sports medicine doc out of Boston. She's a fantastic follow also, as I'm sure your other doc is too. But I sent her a little message about it. And I said, you know, what does this look like? And that video that Russ put out today with him gripping the ball, the fact that his hand could already bend around it and have some sort of a grip. Now, we don't know how strong, obviously, that grip is, was encouraging, because I guess that's the biggest part of it, is getting all that flexibility back in that finger, but also the stability. So you saw that he was wearing a glove today. I would think that will stay for a while, even if he does come back for Green Bay. And so that was really encouraging to me. But really what it comes down to is Russ, right? Like, we know how damn determined he is. You're right. He truly believes there's nothing on the planet that can stop him. And I think it's that determination that probably will bump him over the edge to play in Green Bay, with or without Aaron Rodgers, which I know we're going to talk about later. But I think that he'll want to do that. And now he has a good chunk of time to do it.
Yeah, Jeff, there's kind of a pair of news stories related to quarterback play for that game that came out way early. One of them is related to Russ, and I think part of the news, obviously the biggest part of the news, is that the pin came out, that he's throwing already, all that's ahead of schedule, at least from some accounts. Also, I think noteworthy that he was throwing with a glove. Russ, for people that don't know, Russ has historically been really reluctant to use a glove. Pete Carroll, for people that know, Pete always throws with a glove, and you know, has mentioned in interviews before that there's been some question, like why doesn't Pete get Russ to use a glove, especially in the wet weather, because he hasn't been that great of a wet weather quarterback. And Pete said that Russ has been pretty adamant that he's not wanting to wear a glove. So I think that's interesting. I'm curious if maybe he'll change his tune on that front, especially going into Green Bay. It might be a bad weather game. So could be interesting. And maybe this will be some new, you know, bonus thing that we get out of this, you know, unfortunate situation. But the other piece of news, and feel free to talk about the Russ stuff as well, but the other piece of news that came out today related to quarterback play in that game was Aaron Rodgers going on 10-day quarantine because he was unvaccinated and has been tested positive for COVID. So he, I think, you know, maybe Jeff, if you want to fill in some of the blanks about, if you don't have them, I can, but about whether he was vaccinated or not and what kind of went on there, and then what that means relative to the Seahawks game, as much as we know right now.
Yeah, so the whole saga today was really interesting because it came out this morning pretty early that he wasn't going to play this week. And I think Dana was the first person to kind of have her instincts come up on this. But usually when someone tests positive and they're vaccinated, they have the chance of coming back if they have two negative tests within 48 hours of testing positive, and they have a chance to play during the week. But instantly he was ruled out. So this meant, and obviously Dana was the one pointing this out this morning, this meant he wasn't vaccinated because he wouldn't have been ruled out otherwise. And I found it a little peculiar. The league insiders, the guys who are paid by the NFL, were the ones who reported that this morning. So that came out, which means he's not vaccinated, which was really interesting because he was asked about this in training camp, and everyone's probably seen that clip today, but he said he was immunized. Is that the right word for it?
Yeah.
And that's a very misleading. And then again, the NFL Network came out with the story that he tried to push back from, he had a very specific training that he thought would give him the antibodies and work instead of a vaccine. And the league pushed back and they had talks with doctors. So as a result, he is not vaccinated, which means he's out for 10 days. So he's out for this week, and the earliest he can come back is the Saturday before the Seahawks game. So which means he can't practice all of next week. And this is assuming he's not still positive at this point because he's not vaccinated. He has to test negative, and that's the earliest he can come back. So we don't know if he's going to be able to play that game. The earliest he can come back and join the facility and play with it and like practice, and they don't have practice on Saturdays, so they might have a walkthrough, is the day before the game. So it's really up in the air if he'll be back for that second game, which is the Seahawks game next week.
Yeah, so the story that you know, it had many layers to it, right? So
yeah,
he has COVID, which is probably the least discussed part of the story. COVID's different for everybody. So the assumption is he's just going to roll by and be fine. You don't know, like, it may be a while before he's recovered from COVID. So that's just one piece.
Yeah. Cam Newton last year, I don't know if you guys remember this. He was playing really, really well at the end of the year. He got COVID and he said he wasn't himself for 6-7 weeks after. And you can see it in his performance.
Yeah. You just don't know. I mean, there's no way to predict. And then he had gotten some kind of homeopathic treatment but also kind of implied that he had been vaccinated, but really wasn't. It sounds like the NFL knew the whole time and, you know, judged him to be unvaccinated by their standards. And it's unclear whether or not he was honest with the team, or I don't know. There's some questions about whether he was forthright and following protocols properly. And Dana, I think you looked into some of this, but, you know, even if they find that he violated some aspect of the rules here, you know, do we know if there's any potential for suspension and in addition to this quarantine time?
So I did look it up, and there doesn't seem to be a suspension aspect to the punishment of this. Now, I think that would change if he knowingly lied to people or lied to the team, but that's at least not the story that's being thrown out there. And Nathan called that out first thing today. He's like, oh, watch the backpedaling. that's going to happen here real quick to cover Aaron Rodgers' ass. And that's exactly what happened. But it looks like from what I read, it's just fines. You can be fined for not following protocol. And there's a lot of reporters who were mad. They were the local beat reporters. And they're like, he has never worn a mask. Well, then someone said, well, technically, if you look at the letter of the law, there is no requirement for masking in a press conference. But the weird thing is Green Bay had had their other non-vaccinated players, because they have a handful, do all of their meetings or all of their press conferences via Zoom, except Aaron Rodgers. And so that's what's making people take a pause a little bit. It's like, well, why was there one set of rules for him and not for the next, which makes people wonder if he did tell the truth to the team. We don't know. But they're saying he did. So that's it. There's other people who said, oh, they've seen him on a smaller plane. So he was on the plane. He always wore the mask. None of us believe it. I mean, at least I don't believe it. People I've read, they don't buy it. They just know that they're just trying to cover it so that he doesn't get any trouble. But this is going to be something that the NFL is going to have to either, they're going to have to pick a side on this, because they've had one set of rules for some players. But if Aaron Rodgers gets to skirt those rules, that's going to be a huge problem.
Nathan, what were your thoughts on this story when you heard it, and what you've learned since?
I mean, I was initially surprised, I guess, because, I mean, he came out in that press conference and said he was immunized, and then apparently not. And so pretty surprising that he would, he would just lie about it like that. I don't know. I mean, hopefully he's okay. Like you said, you know, Cam Newton, Jason Tatum, there's a handful of athletes that, I think there's a Bill offensive lineman that said it really kicked their ass. So, you know, hopefully first and foremost, he's okay. But I don't know. For me, it's just, it seems pretty clear that he was really at best skirting some rules here. He's just going to get away scot-free with it. And so that's a little frustrating, but whatever, hopefully he's okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just not just for me, but my reaction is this just fits his persona to a T.
That was going to be my point.
I mean, it's just like, I'm better than everybody else. I know better than doctors what's going to actually help me. I'm going to do some like homeopath. I shouldn't be so dismissive, but you know, he's so arrogant, and he just thinks he's so much smarter than everybody else. And I think he seems to only care about himself. Like the fact that he was in those press conferences unmasked, it's super irresponsible. Regardless of how you feel about all this stuff, if like there is no doubt that this thing is transmitted you know, by droplets and by people being unmasked. So it's just a dick move. And I don't think he's particularly popular in Green Bay among fans as much anymore. A lot of them turned on him pretty fast in that first game. I think the only thing that's kept this marriage working is that he's so good and that they win. Otherwise, I think he and Green Bay are a really bad, bad marriage. And when it goes wrong, it's going to go really, really wrong.
There was a great tweet today. I was just looking for it and I can't find it, but it was by one of the national media, like level media guys. And I can't find it now, or else I would give them credit for it. But it said, basically, he saw what happened. He feels like Aaron Rodgers saw the criticism online for not being vaccinated.
Oh, I saw that.
And was so afraid of being criticized, he decided to lie instead.
I saw that tweet.
Yeah. And it's like, that's exactly his personality. He cannot handle criticism at all.
Yeah.
And it was like, so you'd rather lie. So now he's what? The lying quarterback. Like, no one's going to believe anything that comes out of his mouth now.
It's funny because I've always struggled to like come up with words or reasons why Aaron Rodgers objectively is an incredible football player, but for whatever reason, he's been one of my least favorite athletes probably the last 10 or 20 years. I've never been able to put my finger on why. And I think today sort of just crystallized everything. I think he's a coward. I think when things go wrong, and this is what bothered me about him probably before today, when things go wrong, he never seems to take responsibility. He's always wanted to point the finger. And you've heard relationships about his teammates. But this story just crystallized everything where he's putting himself before the team. We all know the health implications of this. And then there's people in the media trying to cover up for him that he's scared. Like, I know Carson Wentz came out and Kirk Cousins, and their responses were pretty hard to comprehend because they were just so far from what reality. But at least you can, like, in some twisted level, respect that they're owning it. He's just hiding from it. He's lying. He's putting the media at risk. He's putting teammates at risk. He was at this Halloween party. I think that's where he must have got COVID. I don't know how he got COVID. But I just think he's a bit of a coward and he's a bit of a fraud. And I think he's, like Brian said, he's a shitty, arrogant guy. And he always talks about, like, he plays for, like, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's always like, the sky is falling, everything's going wrong. Like, they've had, like, the best pass protecting offensive line in the league the last few years. They have Davante Adams. I just don't like the guy. And, like, objectively, he's a great player. I can't take that away from him. But I think everything Brian said is so accurate.
Well, here's the other thing. He's going to play.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody should expect he will play in that game. I think there is a better chance of Aaron Rodgers playing in that game than of Russell Wilson playing in that game.
That's true.
I don't know. It all depends on symptomatic. Better chance. If he's symptomatic at all, he has to be asymptomatic for a certain number of days. Mm-hmm. And so if he is symptomatic at all into next week, I don't know that they'll let him play on Sunday. That's all that it comes down to, is if he's symptomatic or not. And then he does have to test negative.
Maybe they can send the results to that same lab that held Gerald Everett's results. And
well,
that'd be handy.
Even if Russell plays, I still think it seems highly likely. So in case it wasn't clear, he cannot come back till the Saturday before. I think you said that, Jeff. So the day before the game, we wouldn't be eligible. He would not practice all next week. I don't think that matters with a guy like Aaron Rodgers that's been in the system for as long as he has. He'll get the game plan. He'll know what they're doing. And I think he'd play well. So I think anyone that's holding out hope that this means he's not going to play or he's going to be really bad in that game, I think that's hopeful at best. So, you know, it is a story to watch. We won't know till the very, you know, probably a few minutes leading up to the whole thing, but it is going to be fascinating to see what happens there. There are some other people. There are some other people that may be back as well, not just Russell. So a name that we haven't talked about for weeks is D. Eskridge. This is a guy that Pete's talked about coming back multiple times, so he might be just totally off again. But Nathan, we saw what we saw of him when we saw him was pretty cool, looked exciting. Pete said last week before the Jacksonville game that D was back with them, that he'd seen a concussion specialist in Florida, that I can't remember, it was a vision thing. He said he was having some issue with it, and so they checked him out and that he would be back after the bye. That was what I heard. Did you guys hear the same thing?
Yep.
Yes. So let's assume for a second that Eskridge is back. What's your expectation of how he'd be used in that game?
Yeah. So the one thing to say, he's expected to be back for the bye or after the bye. So they're planning for him to play against Green Bay, but he still has to get through like 2 weeks of practice and all that. So he's not a sure thing yet, but I think, that's where he's at right now. I think he makes potentially a huge difference. Seattle is one of the bottom five teams in terms of use of motion. And we've seen them try to still do like end arounds and other things. And it's worked kind of with Everett. There's been some boom and bust there a little bit. Freddie Swain hasn't given them a lot there, but it's clearly something that they want to do. It's part of their playbook. He can clearly do it, very well. He's got 2 full weeks to, get back in shape and knock off any rust that he might have. So potentially he's a big weapon here. Is he going to get a ton of touches? Probably not, but he presents a threat and gives the defense something that they have to plan for and respect. And that can really change a game. And so, I said, I don't remember if it was the Pittsburgh game or the Saints game, but you said that if they had Creed Humphrey they win that game. I think if they had I think there's good chance that they win both of those games or either of those games because they were close enough. And he is, I mean, I'm going on a limb here because it's only been like a half of football that we saw of him, but he looked different. And so I think he can really be a big boon to this team.
Jeff, do you think, so I actually agree. I think he has the potential to be a difference maker for this team. It's a big projection based off a very small sample. So I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that. But with the injury he had, which was a concussion, and this is as bad of a concussion aftermath as I've seen in a while. Do they still use him on end arounds? Like on jet sweeps, is there going to be reluctance to put him in harm's way that way? Or, you know, what's your thought on how it might affect how they utilize him?
If they're not going to do that, they probably shouldn't be playing him. If they're not feeling comfortable getting him the ball, that's his best strength, getting the ball and getting horizontal. And what Nathan said was just so true. When he was getting like those end arounds, he looked like he was shot out of a cannon. And we saw him in the last preseason game and we saw him in the first game. He just looked, like Nathan said, different than everyone. And we've seen Gerald Everett be okay on some of those plays, but we've seen Freddie Swain in short horizontal routes, and that's clearly not his strength. So if you're going to play the guy, set him up to succeed. I don't think you can, if you're going to play him, you can really hold back. I don't think that does the team any good. I don't think that does D any good because he's going to need some confidence. He's going to need to get his rhythm going. So I don't think you're going to have him run like deep crossers, and I think you're going to use them the way you're intending to use them, or else you're sort of hurting both you and the team.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a potential that we've all pigeonholed him a little bit as the jet sweep guy. And I know we're not saying that here.
Yeah.
But I think we saw that he actually looks like a really good receiver as well, just a straight receiver, regardless of whether he's running jet sweeps. And I think he could be significantly upgraded over the guys that they've been running out there. Dana, when I look at the targets distribution so far for the Seahawks receivers, it's 56 targets for DK, 58 for Tyler. So those are the two, you know, basically identical. Then it goes down to Freddie Swain at 24. So less than half the targets. One, any hesitation on your side to give all of Freddie Swain's snaps to Dee Eskridge? So that's one. And two, do you think he gets more or less percentage of the targets than what Freddie was getting as the number three guy?
I think that's a tough question because things started finally clicking with DK and Tyler in that last game. So they might want to continue just to push that and use the other wide receivers more as a decoy. And that's really, I mean, even if he just gets on the field and pulls one more player off of DK, awesome, right? Like that's a great job for him to have. But I think that I don't want to disrespect Freddie Swain because he's actually done better than I thought he would this year. So I don't want to say impressed, but I've been pleasantly surprised from Freddie Swain a little bit. But if D is their first round pick, even though he's not, but if he's their first pick, I think you have to give him the opportunity to make an impact. And so that has to come out of Freddie Swain's. It can't really, maybe take some from Tyler, some from DK, because you have to see what you have, right? Like you have a huge contract coming up with DK and we know they're going to pay him. They just extended Tyler. So what do you have with this kid? You need to be able to see that so that then you can thin the herd otherwise. So I would hope that they would use him more than they're using Freddie. But yeah, I think that he's an automatic, I hate to say replacement, because again, Freddie's doing well, an automatic kind of replacement for Freddie at that point.
Yeah, I'm Freddie's playing to me as a fourth receiver. And
he is, but he's done okay. Like he hasn't been terrible. Right. Yeah.
He's fine.
I thought he'd be terrible. So
I don't think he's terrible, but I don't see a lot of upside to Freddie Swain. You know, I think he could just be a solid player. Like we've seen from other guys like Malik Turner and that kind of thing. But yeah, D. Eskridge, I think, could be different. So the other news was around Chris Carson potentially coming back, or at least Pete Carroll said that Chris Carson was going to try to practice this week. And that was coming on the heels of some more ominous updates that maybe he would never be back. And so, Jeff, do you have any feel for, you know, what expectations are for Chris Carson? And similar to my question with Dana, if he is back, you know, how would you expect him and Alex Collins to kind of split reps?
Well, I still have a skeptical view of the whole thing. Neck injuries are really tricky. And
especially for a running back.
Especially if, yeah, we saw, like, it's obviously different than what happened with Cliff and with Cam, but those, that, it's neck injuries. I can't really predict what's going to happen. He takes one and the wrong hit, that could be it for a season. And so I'm still skeptical. I'm in the wait and see camp. I don't know if he'll play. Pete's gone completely. One week it sounded like he wasn't going to play the rest of the year. The next week he's like, oh, he's going to practice next week and he might play. So I tend not to believe anything Pete says with injuries anymore. The stuff with Alex Collins has been really weird in terms of like, oh, he's totally healthy, he's going to practice today. It's like, oh, he's got a groin injury on the injury report. So, but one thing I do want to see, regardless of Carson, is I would like to see them, if they're going to, I like them to see them feature Alex Collins more. It seems like they're just really trying to get Penny going and it's not really working out. And it seems like they're just trying to justify him the last couple games. If they're going to, if Carson's not ready, I'd rather just not see as much Penny as we've seen. I think that we've seen all that we need to. And I think he should just be insurance at this point.
I think they were hoping, they probably wouldn't admit it, I think they were hoping that he would have at least one big game prior to the trade deadline and that somebody would be like, hey.
One big run would have been nice.
Right. I mean, like, as many teams that needed a running back or lost player, like, and this is a former first round pick, and I bet they didn't get a single call.
Oh, no. It was almost,
they've gotten one call. Yeah. But it was like immediately after he was drafted, according to John.
Wasn't there a story also?
That's like, John's favorite.
Wasn't there a story also like two or three years ago that like someone offered them like a third round pick at the deadline and they turned it down?
Wasn't there, it was even more than that, right? Wasn't it like a second?
Yeah, it was like at the deadline, like, oh, we're not trading this guy, and then he got like hurt like three games later.
We have
video. No, that's Earl Thomas that you're thinking of.
Maybe.
No, there was some Penny story. There was.
Story.
I think it was like the Lions or something.
We have video of me on this show by Penny's second year saying I was ready to give him up for like a fourth round pick. And we're like, what? I'm like, yeah. Man, like,
there was video on... Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was going to say his last name is ominous of his value in the NFL. Yeah. So.
There were people on draft night saying he should have been a third or fourth round pick. Yeah. There were people on draft night saying LJ Collier should have been a third or fourth round draft pick.
Oh, imagine if his last name was, if it was Rashad Crypto. I mean, we'd be in a totally different place right now than we are.
That Collier story was so bad. The worst PR attempt I've ever seen. What? You guys see that Jeremy Fowler thing? I think Michael Sean fell for this. He said like the Seahawks actually see a lot of value in Collier despite being a healthy scratch. It was the worst PR attempt I've ever seen. This means no one wanted to even talk about him. And yeah, people fell for that. They're like, how can you see value? They don't see any freaking value in this guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a trade deadline standpoint, I think it's worth just recapping a couple things there, right? So the Seahawks made no moves. And I think we all had our fingers crossed that maybe they could sucker somebody into giving them a conditional pick for Collier or Penny or someone like that. They got nothing, but they also gave up nothing. Meanwhile, our division rivals, the Los Angeles Rams, went and gave up a second and a third round pick for Von Miller. So he is going to be opposite of Leonard Floyd on the same line as Aaron Donald. And that's easily the biggest move made at the deadline. Other moves that were made, I think, aren't as huge. I mean, we saw Melvin Ingram go to the Chiefs. I think we saw the Houston Texans defensive lineman we had talked about, I think, on our show, go to
San Francisco,
right? For a sixth round pick or a late, mm-hmm, late pick, something like that. So not a lot of big moves there. But let's also mention some of the guys that got let go. So DeSean Jackson got waived by the Rams, which I have to say kind of surprised me. I mean, he made plays when he was given opportunity this year, and he clearly wants to get a bigger portion of the targets than he was getting down there. And so honestly, I'll give the Rams some credit. You know, they did right by the player and let him go, hopefully find a place where he can get what he's looking for. They didn't have to do that, and it could potentially go to a team that they're competing with. So that happened. Did OBJ officially get released yet?
No, he didn't.
So the story there is that it is strongly rumored that he may get let go because, you know, for a variety of reasons. And so there might be two veteran receivers of varying levels of quality, but still of value on the waiver wire. And the Seahawks, I think, are 10th on the waiver claim list. Yeah. So let's start there for a second. Dana, do you want the Seahawks to put in a waiver claim? Let's say that OBJ gets put on the waivers. Do you want the Seahawks to put in a waiver claim on either one of those guys?
I think if D cannot play by the Green Bay game, I would hope, or it doesn't look like he's trending to be able to play. I think yes. I think that they need to just say, okay, kid, we're going to kind of like what they did with Taylor last year. We're going to make sure you're healthy. We'll use you, but we need this space filled. I would much prefer Jackson over OBJ. I can't wrap my head around Odell Beckham Jr. and Jamal Adams on the same team. Those egos would be so big, no one else could fit in the meeting rooms. Like, it'd be weird, right? So, I think that there's just a lot. I can't decide if Odell would go to a new team and just kill it because he's so pissed at the Browns, or if he would be Odell Beckham Jr. that just kind of sits and pouts. And so I can't quite decide. I know that as of right now, he's having no contact with his coaching staff or anyone. So it's ugly there. But it also sounds a little familiar about what happened in New York. So I would prefer Jackson over the two. I think he's a hard worker. I like DeSean Jackson a lot.
Nathan, I mean, do you think DeSean Jackson might be tempted to come to Seattle because he knows he'll always be open during practice, at least? Like, Jamal Adams still out there for him.
That would be nice. I don't think either of these guys want to come here because they're both mad about targets. And
yes. That's fair.
So, I mean, I'd love to see Odell Beckham come here. He's very good still, I think. But I think you'd end up very quickly in the same place that the Browns are in. So,
yeah, that's my concern, Jeff. Like, DeSean Jackson, I think, is a great fit for Seattle. Deep threat. Russ is the best deep ball thrower in the game. I was interested in him during the free agency. We talked about him, and I think he'd just be perfect. But I think what he wants is, if he's leaving the Rams, who are winning and have a good quarterback and a good passing game, and he's made some big plays, it means that he wants to be either the number one or number two receiver on a team. That seems like what it
here would be my pushback. He doesn't get a choice when what he wants. He's going to waivers. Unless his contract is.
But don't like agents and he have some ability. I mean, he just.
Yeah, but if the Seahawks claim him, they get him and no one else does. Like, they got Josh Gordon in this kind of situation. This is how they got him. And they were a lot lower on the list.
Yeah, I mean, if either of these guys have to go on waivers, then Seattle absolutely has a shot to get them. But the question is, are you just going to pick up somebody who's not going to be pissy the whole time? And how much does that even matter, right? I mean, maybe you do it and you bring in Odell Beckham and he's a baby about it and that's a problem. Or maybe it's who cares? I mean, maybe he stops having contact with Pete Carroll and you don't even really have him. Like, who knows, right? And the other thing with Odell, like, this is much less of a concern with DeSean Jackson, but when you pick up a player off of waivers, you pick up the contract. So, and Beckham's isn't small. So I really have a hard time thinking that they, unless they're really confident about how they can use him, I don't think that they'll pick up OBJ. And it's possible he just goes through waivers completely.
Yeah, I'd say OBJ is far more likely to go through waivers than Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see the Seahawks add more receiving talent. I think that DS Gridge has been a gamble this whole time. I mean, this is a conversation we had heading into this season. I had real questions and concerns about why they didn't have a veteran third receiver on this roster that you'd have some reliability or some projection you could make about. There's a lot riding on DS Gridge, and that has not panned out through half the season. Now, if he comes back and he stays back, great. But I think this team with just DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett is going to continue to struggle. They have not figured out how to get the tight ends involved. You know, Gerald Everett has 17 targets. Will Dissly has 12 targets. Like, it's like a target a game, basically. That's not even a catch a game. That's a target a game. So I don't know. I think they haven't to this point had enough targets to even go to a third receiver. And I think that's why DS Gridge, if he can be healthy, is a good fit there. But yeah, I still would prefer to have a third guy that is better than Freddie Swain and has the potential to take coverage away from a DK Metcalf and a Tyler Lockett. I still think that's important for this offense one way or another.
Brian.
Yes.
DeSean Jackson or Golden Tate?
Oh, I'd be fine with either.
Really? I
mean, yeah.
Golden's not playing this year.
No, it does not.
He wants to.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Doesn't appear that Golden's playing. I mean, Adrian Peterson didn't think he was playing either, Jeff. But yeah, I mean, honestly, with all that we know, I'd actually probably prefer Golden because I think he would take the role. And DeSean Jackson seems like he's in it for him more than he's in it for the team, because otherwise, why would you leave a team that's a leading Super Bowl contender? I think it's dangerous adding people like that onto a team if, you know, you're 3-5 and are trying to build back. So yeah, that would probably be my preference. What about you?
Oh, DeSean Jackson, because he'd bring all that Rams information along with him.
Mm. How'd that work out with Shane Waldron?
Well,
Sunday.
I will tell you, I've already told you guys my feelings on Shane Waldron right now. I'm not his biggest fan. In fact, I'm not even on, you know, anywhere near a fan. So it's true. But at the same time, I think, plus he's been playing, Golden hasn't been playing. He might be in a little bit better shape, that sort of thing. But I mean, Golden would be fine. But I always have a weird feeling about getting the band back together. I just don't ever think it really works well, except for Sherman. I will always have that caveat, but otherwise it's not necessarily my favorite thing. There's the other thing too. We've seen that Russell and Odell Beckham Jr. are also friends. And so I didn't know if that would have any bearing on it at all either, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think the Von Miller addition to the Rams is a bigger deal than the DeSean Jackson subtraction for the Rams.
That's not saying very much.
For sure.
But let me tell you, the Rams are screwed in 2 years. I'm just going to keep saying that.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams are all in this year. And typically, I mean, I don't really love the idea of, you know, mortgaging a lot of things, cap space and otherwise, for trades. You know, I don't think it always works out very well, especially it's definitely a short-term strategy for roster building. But you can't look at the Rams and say that their move for Ramsey and Stafford and what might be Miller aren't working out, are going to potentially going to work out really well for them. Not everything's worked out well. I mean, they gave up a decent amount for Sonny Michel, and I don't think he's been very good, but yeah, I mean, the Rams are, Rams have a particularly good team this year. I think the Von Miller move actually makes them a lot better than they were. So is there any team that you guys see that is better than the Rams right now in the NFC? Tampa Bay.
Ignoring last Sunday, I think Tampa Bay is better. They're more complete anyway. We've seen the Rams have weird moments, and you usually get really nice games out of Tampa Bay. So
yeah,
I'm really high on Dallas too.
Yeah, Dallas really doesn't break in.
I think the playoffs in the NFC are going to be really interesting. I think any of those four teams could win. I think that we really haven't had that.
We just completely ignore the Cardinals.
Yeah. I don't believe the Cardinals. I still don't.
Yeah. So let's talk about the game against Jacksonville. We didn't get to do a post-game show. I wasn't able to watch it live, but I did watch it on replay. And I thought it was their most complete game since the first week of the season. And it, the thing that always drives me a little nuts with these types of situations is you can have a really good team or a really bad team. And when you play a bad team, it's just like caveated to like ad nauseum. Like there, you can beat them by 50 and it's like, well, yeah, but that was the Jaguars. Well, it's still tough to beat somebody by 50. Like you did what you're supposed to do. Like that's a good thing. We've seen the Seahawks completely shit the bed against bad teams, like a lot. So a team that basically shut out the opponent for almost the entire game seem to get the most pass pressure they've had since the first week of the season. Got the quarterback play that I think we were looking for from Geno Smith this whole time, where it's like, is he capable of doing anything well? And he did. Like, I've seen people like diminish his game a little bit. Oh, it came to the Jack. Those were good throws. Like, he made some really good throws in that game, touch passes to Tyler. It just felt like a different game. Yes, the Jags are dumpster fire. They're trash, no doubt about it. But I thought the Seahawks ignored that and played a good game. And Jeff, I'm kind of curious. So like, what were your thoughts on the game?
Well, yeah, I think you have to open with the caveat. Just maybe not have, like, the Jags have some talent. I think they're one of the worst coach teams I've ever – I think Nathan brought it up. That Urban Meyer is one of the worst NFL coaches we've probably seen in a long. I think they're one.
This Nick Saban.
Yeah, Nick Saban had some couple winning year. Like there's Jim Tom Sula in San Francisco following Harbaugh, and there's been some really bad ones I can't think of off the top of my head. But they're really poorly. There was like double 12 men in the field penalties, and Urban Meyer like took off his headset for like a full quarter. He didn't want to talk to anyone. But anyway, I think the most interesting thing I saw was that I think the offense learned from the last two games. I don't know if this was Shane Waldron. I don't know if this was Pete watching the film. I was really frustrated coming out of that Saints game because of how stubborn I thought they played. And I thought in this game, they gave Geno and the offense a chance to succeed. And that's what I found so infuriating about those last two games. I thought they were running into boxes. They weren't going, like DK had that touchdown and didn't get the ball for 40 minutes. Tyler Lockett was invisible. This game, they ran the offense through their two best players. And I think we saw just a more comfortable, a more smooth, a more repeatable offense. And Geno did play well. Like his completion percentage above expectation was really high this week. And he made some really good throws. He had one, but I don't know how repeatable that was. I'm not getting excited about Geno. I think we know what Geno is. But I thought just the way the offense looked structurally was really good and really important. Hopefully they learn from that terrible Saints game. Because I hated their game plan in the Saints game. I didn't think they'd win. I just found it so frustrating. So to see them just go through DK and open up Lockett again, to me, that was really encouraging. And I thought on the alternatively, I think the cornerback group isn't that bad. I think Trey Brown's made a big difference to them. Reed moving over to the other side. I know I want to see them against real opponents. I'm still a little wait and see, but I think since they removed Trey Flowers, they've been like, I don't think they're good at corner, but I think they're fine there. And that's a huge difference for was one of the worst position groups in the NFL in the first four or five games.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's well said. Nathan, what did you think about the game on Sunday?
Yeah. I mean, so good teams blow out bad teams. Like you said, I mean, that's all you can really ask a team to do against a team like the Jaguars. So you're right. Like, it doesn't make sense to caveat it and be like, oh, but it was a bad team. Like, yeah, it's the NFL. Those are the teams that you do that to, right? Or you should do that to. And so they did what they were supposed to do, and that's good. The offense looked clean. Geno looked good. You know, I predicted them to lose, so there's egg on my face for that. I think we all talked about Geno not really getting Tyler Lockett involved or and he did that. So there's a lot of positives for the team to look at. All that said, I do think this is one of the worst teams I've ever seen, and it's because Urban Meyer is one of the worst coaches in the NFL I've ever seen. He's Bobby Petrino levels of bad. You know, if you go through a lot of the really terrible coaches, like the especially terrible coaches in the NFL, you can just kind of tell they're not putting the work in. Urban's not putting the work in. Bobby Petrino didn't put the work in. Steve Spurrier didn't put the work in. Tom Sula's kind of a tragic figure on this, because I think that dude probably did work his ass off. He just wasn't, you know, he was in over his head. He got Peter principled like 4 times and it was a disaster. But Urban is checked out, and like it's just visible from like watching the sidelines when the whole team is huddled up and trying to like, you know, get amped up and get back out on the field, and he is standing like 3 feet behind the group and just looking dead, dead inside, looking like he'd rather be anywhere but there. It's a team that plays like he looks. So I don't take a lot out of the game outside of, you know, they took advantage of a bad team, which is all you can ask them to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think Urban Meyer, it's kind of surprising that they haven't fired him already.
Yeah.
I think that'll be the least surprising news break when it happens. But yeah, I don't know. I thought Geno did play well. I thought the offensive line did a decent job at the beginning. I think they were pretty bad toward the end. I thought Ethan Posick was what I thought, you know, like I would bet without knowing for sure, I would bet he was making more appropriate line calls ahead than Kyle Fuller was. Pete seemed to mention, infer that a little bit, who knows. Sometimes it's like when you've got mediocre talent on the line, or maybe even average, above average, just making the right call can be a difference between a well run play and not. So you can't underestimate how important it is to make the right line call, but he still is a turnstile. Like Dewan Smoot made him look foolish multiple times. Aaron Donald will do much, much, much worse and has in the past. So yeah, I am not a big Ethan Posick guy. I don't think I ever will be, but he might be an improvement over Kyle Fuller, as much as I'm not a fan. And then I thought this was one of DK's better games. His numbers weren't huge, but he had, like, he even made mention of it. There have been a remarkably few moments where the team has thrown it up to him in the end zone, in the red zone, and given him a chance to make the play. He made it. Like, that was a great catch, a great play. I thought he caught the ball with his hands in this game. He's been a guy that I feel like has really questionable hands. Thought they were pretty reliable in this game. So I thought the receivers, he and Tyler, played really well. Otherwise, on defense, it was just nice to see pressure one way or another. Like, you could say against Jags, man, they played all sorts of bad offensive lines and they have not been able to create any pressure whatsoever. But I think I tweeted something like 9 guys had at least 2 pressures on defense. Like they had 30 pressures overall, which those are most of the season. That's good. That's good. And I agree wholeheartedly, Jeff. I thought DJ Reed and even Sidney Jones, who does not get a lot of love on this pod, I thought Sidney Jones played well coming in for Reed. And it does sound like Reed will be back, right? He had a groin injury, Dana, and it sounded like an MRI was negative or something along those lines. Is that what you heard?
Yeah. What I read was that they expect him to play after the bye. So okay. I think he'll be all right.
So, yeah, I mean, okay, that aside, was there anything that did anyone like walk away from this game feeling different about the Seahawks than they did before?
I think so. I think I said this in our group chat after the game, and I meant it, that it was very smooth. And that is what we said. The offense was very smooth after the first game. Remember, we're like, oh, this Waldron, the offense, it's smooth. Like it runs really, really pretty. I felt like we saw that a little bit again, even with Geno this last week. Like they could get in a rhythm. Obviously, we understand our competition. It was not, you know, great, but they just felt it had a nice rhythm to it. It had a nice feel to it. And I thought that we hadn't seen that since that first game, was that kind of nice smoothness to the offense. I was really impressed with the defense. I mean, they held that team to 0 points for 58 minutes. That's pretty amazing. I think that's great. You could tell they were getting a little tired at the end, you know, but I was not as worked up about not getting the shutout as everyone else. I swear, Seahawks Twitter sometimes just baffles me. I'm like, you guys are mad about a garbage time touchdown. Okay, whatever. But the shutout would have been cool. I get it, but it doesn't really matter. But I like that we, you know, Diggs, I think that this was his game to finally get the recognition that he's been playing pretty well all season. I think we saw Carlos Dunlap more than we have seen him. And I know that people are very anti Jamal Adams right now, but even he played really well in this game. So I was really impressed with the defense on this side too.
Yeah, Jeff, would you believe the Seahawks are 11th in the NFL in points allowed on defense?
No, the first three or four games just felt like every player was running free wide open. So they have played better defense. The last two games have been really solid. 13, what was it? Less than 10 points combined the last two games average.
Yeah. I mean, even if you include the Rams game, they're fifth in the NFL over the last four games.
that's a little surprising.
And even that Rams game where they gave up all those points in the second half, I mean, three of them were at the end after Geno's interception, but that was the second lowest points the Rams have scored all year. It was against the Seahawks. So I don't know. I don't think the defense is great, but I think the defense has been disciplined. They've been sound. And to your point, they haven't been so miserable in the secondary that anybody who wants to get yards is getting Oprah'd out there. Like, you get yards, everybody was open against this defense. And that seems to have been corrected. Whether they can like hold up to a really good quarterback, I think is to be seen. We'll see. I mean, we're likely going to get 2 weeks in a row. We'll see what goes on with Kyler Murray, who's got an ankle, but now they're talking, it said 1 to 3 weeks. It sounds like he might even play this weekend. So, you know, we'll see what goes on there.
I'm having a hard time with all this defense talk because, like, on the one hand, I'm going a little insane because people all the, oh, you know, they only allowed so many points in the last few games. And it's like, did we just completely forget about the second half of last season where it was like, oh, you know, they really shut down Colt McCoy and Dwayne Haskins. And I mean, but then the other part of it is all those bozos that were trying to tell me I didn't know how to evaluate cornerback play with Trey Flowers, and suddenly that dude's gone and the defense doesn't give up many points anymore. And boy, isn't that just a big old coincidence.
Look, I mean, I think both things can totally be true. And it is always about you, Nathan. Like,
it is
really clear. But no, I mean, you could have one cornerback who is a disaster, and that's enough to just make your, I mean, they will pick on you. You see when a new guy comes in, they just throw at you repeatedly. And if you're weak, they will keep going at you. So they don't have to be great, but they just can't be awful. And Trey Flowers is pretty awful. So,
well, not only that, a bad cornerback pulls all the rest of your secondary out of alignment because they're covering for him all the time. So it makes you wonder. It's like everyone's like, where the hell's Diggs? Why is Jamal Adams not playing good? Well, they're covering his ass. That's what they're doing. And so that switch lets them play their positions a little better.
Yeah.
Were you disagreeing, Jeff?
No, I'll just say, Jamal Adams has had many coverage issues for his own issues, but I was the biggest Trey Flowers hater probably going, maybe. So I'm not surprised. And you remember that Super Bowl with Nick Foles, where Nick Foles beat the Patriots. Malcolm Butler mysteriously didn't play in that Super Bowl, and having that 1 week link, that was actually the year we got Justin Coleman from them. And having that 1 week link basically opened their entire defense. But I think my big takeaway from this game, and I'm not quite there yet, but if you're one of the people hoping like the Seahawks have this playoff push in them, and this doesn't have much to do with seeing them play clean was obviously really nice, but the rest of the NFC after that top four or five, and the Saints are looking like that seven seed looks pretty open. The Vikings loss to Cooper Rush and Danielle Hunter is out for the season. Carolina's quarterback got concussed. I don't know if any of you saw the Falcons play. They look awful without Calvin Ridley. San Francisco's looking a little better, but they don't have a quarterback. Philadelphia's pretty bad. The Giants lost again. Seattle a favorite for the seven? Like, I don't know if Minnesota will win another game. I looked at their schedule. If you're in that camp, there's an opening there. You can win 8 or 9 games and potentially get in the playoffs this year in that seventh
season. I don't think you can really say much about the Seahawks playoffs until the next 2 games are played.
Like, I know. I'm just saying.
The most likely situation is they're going to lose both of those games. That's the most likely. And then you're talking about a 3-17 team.
Like, I'm not there. I'm just saying, if you are there, this is the hope, I think, for you right now, because Russell's coming back and the defense is looking functional. I don't think they're good yet.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, the most likely, if I had to guess right now, I think the Seahawks win one of those 2 games.
Well, especially the way, I mean, the Rodgers thing could very much throw that. And I know you think he's basically guaranteed, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we can say that.
I'm not as confident. I mean, I do think that the NFL is probably, I don't think there's going to be any kind of repercussions for whatever rule breaking has happened to date. But I would be surprised if the NFL messed around with like test results or something like that at this point. So, but I mean, you know, the playoff picture for this team hasn't changed really since, you know, I mean, in a little while. Coming out of the Rams game, they needed to, you know, take at least one of the Pittsburgh and Saints games to give them a really good shot, right? Yeah. Then you only have to beat one of the good teams that they play the rest of the way. They've dropped them both, so now they have to win 2 of those games. And one of those games maybe isn't going to be a hard game at all, depending on the quarterback situation. So, yeah.
All right, we should go to patron questions. I am curious, like, how things would change if the Seahawks won both of the next 2 games. I don't know if anyone's asking that question. If they beat 2 7-1 teams, which I guess their record's going to be different by then, that would be fascinating.
There's hope again. There's hope glimmering.
I, you know, I've been very consistent.
I just saw life in Brian's eyes for the first time in like a year.
I'm not a curmudgeon about these things. I just, I'm asking an open question. So I think it's curious. It would be curious.
Do you want me to play the Evan role? Oh, come on. You don't think, man. Okay, there. Okay.
Evan could go either way. He could be right there with you. And he could be like, yeah, right. Super Bowl, winning the tables. Yeah. I want to talk about one more thing before we go to Patreon questions, okay, about interesting thing to come out of not just this last game, but the Geno experience. There's been a ton of talk about Russ's use of the intermediate middle. People were killing them for that last year, and that's the reason why they couldn't beat Cover 2 and all this stuff. And in fairness, it's not an area he uses for sure. And Waldron was hopefully going to fix that. It didn't really materialize. And you know, for the games that he was playing, and there was a question about, does that change with Geno Smith? Does Geno do something different? Geno is taller, so can he see over his quarterbacks or his linemen better? I think Geno had more batted passes in like 3 games than Russ has had his entire career. But even setting that aside, no, there was no intermediate middle. Geno didn't attack that either, and he's Geno Smith, so who knows what that means and whether a different quarterback would play differently, you know, a real starting quarterback. But I think it's interesting that, you know, that was one of the things that when we talked about, you know, what because Geno came into that Rams game and played well, and we were like, what can Geno do to really like make this awkward for Russell? And that was what I had talked about, is like, if he can do some of these things and maybe isn't better overall but uses the whole field. It just wasn't there, and the routes weren't there. Like, it just wasn't there. So I thought it was interesting that we got through it, and Geno played the same way that Russ played. Well, I mean, not as well.
Geno played like Geno. Like, he played like a terrible quarterback.
The offense looked, the structurally, the offense was the same with Geno as it was with Russ. Like, he was not trying to do different things. Obviously, the quality gap is massive. I'm not trying to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go to some patron questions. And while Nathan gets those up, if you haven't already, give the show a like, thumbs up, just takes a second, click subscribe and the bell to get notified when we go live. And if you want to get your questions asked and answered, patreon.com/hawkblogger, quick, easy way to get part of our Slack community where we get questions asked every week. We try to answer them. And we've given away 8 tickets to Seahawks games so far this year. I think people have had a really good time, and you never know what might be coming in other giveaways. So please join over at patreon.com/hawkblogger. Nathan, what questions do we have this week?
So Sam Brand wants to know, would beating Green Bay on the road change your expectations for the season or your vision of this team at all? Let's extend that to the Cardinals game. Let's just keep on that conversation we were just having where you actually got excited to be alive again, Brian. What does that mean if they win these next 2 games?
You asking me?
Yeah.
If the Seahawks win these next 2 games, then they'll make the playoffs. That's what I think it means. I don't know that it means much more than that.
So let's say they win the next 2 games, they beat the bad teams, they lose another game to the Cardinals, another game to the Rams, they go into the playoffs. Do you feel differently about the rebuild? Are you still in burn it down, get me picks, let's build for the future, or do you feel different?
Yeah, well, that's why I don't think it changes much beyond that. So let me be as brief as I can on this. So I've been clear about what I believe needs to happen, which is I think that they need to reset. That includes, front office, coaching, and quarterback. You know, not because the quarterback's bad, but because he's their only option to get picks and replenish what is, I think, a really weak roster and the wrong age roster of where their top talent is. That still will be true. I also have said clearly that what I think will happen is I think they'll all be here next year. And so I still think that would be true, especially if they make the playoffs. And I think that part of why I've wanted to reset is because what I saw very early on this season is this is a similar type of team that we've seen. Their top end is not Super Bowl. It's not. Like, they don't have the talent to compete and contend for a championship. And based on the way this roster is and the age and where they are and all that, those cycles, I think if they're not contending right now for a Super Bowl or clearly taking a step toward it, then they need to be resetting because they're too old to not do that. And they don't have enough young talent to not be doing that. So them making the playoffs, even if they win a game, changes nothing about how I feel other than I'd enjoy it. I would love to watch them do that because it's way more fun, but that otherwise I think that's where they are as a franchise.
Okay. Sam Brand also wants to know, how many games, Dana, over the rest of the season do you think are truly winnable for the Seahawks? Do you want to run through the schedule with me and predict the rest of the way?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So at Packers.
That depends on if Aaron Rodgers is there. If Rodgers is there, then I think they lose that game. If he's not, I think they have a very good chance of winning that game.
Okay. I'm going to make you pick win or loss.
I don't know that Aaron Rodgers is going to be there, so I'm going to say win.
Gotcha.
Just because I don't think he'll be there.
Cardinals at home?
In Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
Lose.
At Washington?
Win.
Home against the Niners?
Montez Sweat will be out for that game.
I'm sorry, what?
Montez Sweat will be out for that
game. They're very bad, Washington.
Yeah, they're a disaster.
They're very bad.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Go on.
That's okay.
Cardinals or 49ers at home.
Win.
At the Texans, that's a loss, right?
No, because I'll be at that game. World. So I always bring luck, right? No, that's a win.
At the Rams.
Loss.
Home against the Bears.
Win.
home against the Lions.
Oh, wait. God, I hope so.
And at Arizona.
Win. I think that they play well in Arizona.
You have them going, what is that, 10-7 then, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have that, you think, 7 wins. 7 of these games are winnable.
7-2. They'd end 7-2.
I don't think that that sounds so crazy. With you're looking at their competition. Like, if you look at who they're playing, I don't think that sounds so crazy. I guess there's a chance they lose both those Arizona games, but I don't know that that is the case, because divisional games are weird like that. But I see them splitting those two. So yeah, I'm not worried about the Niners game at all. So I think, yeah, I don't think that's so crazy.
I'm a little worried about one of the Washington Niner or Chicago games. I think the Texans and Lions are just too bad, but the thing that sucks about it is that going 7-2 the rest of the way feels like it should get you more than 10 wins on the season, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it works. When you bite it so hard at the beginning of the season, that there's just, it's hard to make up for that. Does 10-7 get you into the playoffs? Maybe. I mean, it depends on just how the other
100% it does.
You think? Really?
There is no team in the NFC. Have you looked at those NFC teams? There's no team.
Well, no, that's fair. And I do keep forgetting that they've expanded the playoffs, but it's just like, I think that's been a tough road for Seattle. I don't know, but I think getting to double digit wins is probably the most important thing for the mindset of this team. I think in my thought is, if you get to double digits, you get to at least a playoff game. And, you know, there's only been one year in the Wilson Carroll era that they haven't gotten double digit wins. So I think that that's going to be a huge goal for them.
It would be a huge accomplishment for them to make the playoffs after their start, no matter what the rest of the NFC looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I do agree with Brian in the fact, though, that I think if they make the playoffs, that you're not going to see the changes that some people want. And I was pretty vocal last week where I think that it may be time for Pete to go. And I think that I don't know that I agree. I definitely don't agree with Russell. We disagree on that. But I think that it is time for Pete to go. If they go 7-2 at the end, I don't think you're going to get what people aren't going to get what they want out of that necessarily. I think that you'll have the same again next year, unless Russell pushes that a little.
Yeah, I agree. And then Braxton has kind of a out of left field question here. And he makes an assumption that I don't know if everyone's going to agree about, but he wants everyone to go around and answer, aside from Russell Wilson, who do you think is the best Seahawks player in franchise history? Is there anyone that disagrees that Russ is the best in franchise history? Brian? Okay. I don't think it's crazy to disagree.
I don't think that Russell can be it depends on your criteria.
Yeah. I don't think I agree.
So Russ has never been the best player at his own position in the NFL for any year of his career. Walter Jones was maybe the best player in the NFL during his time, and definitely the best player at his position. So,
and I think there are people who argue that Largent was the best receiver in NFL history up until Jerry Rice came around.
Maybe they played at the same time, though, mostly. Like, there's not a huge overlap where Largent was without Rice. I don't know. I think Cortez Kennedy is the other one that you could, because he was defensive player of the year, but I felt like Cortez had one year where he was the best player in the NFL defensively and then was not that player ever after 92. Like, I thought he was very good, but I think so. To me, Walter Jones is the best player. But Jeff, what were you gonna
say? No, that was my answer. I think there's a case that Walter Jones is the best left tackle in NFL history. And I don't think you can say that about any other Seahawk.
Valuable. Like, if
Russell's clearly the most valuable player,
in Seahawks history, I think Russell's the most valuable.
Not even close. Yeah.
I'll put my Evan hat on and say it's none of those guys, and it's somebody that's on the team right now. And we just aren't to the end of the road with him yet. DK Metcalf is the greatest.
I think you say Jason Myers. Oh my God.
No. I think Evan's finally given up the ghost on that one. DK, I don't know. Receiver's so tough with all the records at this point. But
Yeah, Ruben Rodriguez was a close second to Walter for me. The only guy I've seen kick a negative yard punt before. He was a special kind of player.
So, Dana, who do you take? You have rest number one then. Who do you take number two?
No, I guess I was misunderstanding because I was thinking most valuable in my head. No, I agree with Walter Jones. I do think there's a case for Largent. I get that. So you're saying the best player in the entire history. The only time I have a problem with that, because just like I do the term GOAT, G-O-A-T, greatest of all time, it's impossible. It's got to be G-O-T, greatest of the era, because the games are so different and you can't. So I have a hard time with those kind of questions. But so I would pick probably Walter Jones over Russell, but Russell's definitely much more valuable. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So Braxton, you're wrong. It's not Russell at all. It's Walter Jones. I think we across the board disagree with you. And then one last one here. Will wants to know Super Bowl matchups. Does anyone have a Super Bowl matchup that they feel strongly about, a shot they want to call? Dana?
Well, I'm sticking with the one I had at the beginning of the year and that I did on our turf podcast. I have the Bills. I think I picked the Bills and the Bucks, and I have the Bills winning the Super Bowl this year. I think the AFC is fascinating this year, though, and I know that our listeners probably don't give two craps about the AFC, but it was so clear cut at the beginning of the season, and now it's so wide open that I think that it's a really fascinating thing to kind of watch with the, you know, Chiefs doing what they're doing, and you know, now the Titans without Henry and all this fun stuff. But I still think the Bills. I think the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl this year.
I like the Bills. I don't know. That's the hard one to pick for me is the AFC. I have no idea what to do with the AFC.
What's the easy pick in the NFC then?
There is none. There's four or five.
I think you can make a case. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think you can make a case for what's interesting about the playoffs this year is what you guys said. The AFC is just completely topsy-turvy. It's weird every week. I think the team that's been first place the last 3 weeks have lost the next game. So
they have.
The NFC, it's clear who the top teams are. And I think what's interesting about the playoffs last year, it was either the Packers or the only team who could beat them was the Bucks, and that's who made the NFC this year. I think it's those two teams, but the Rams are obviously loaded up. And Dallas is really good. Oh, Dak, and I underestimate Dak. He's really, like, he's as good as a lot of the analytical numbers people were suggesting. I think he's even better than what a lot of people were suggesting. So I'm a believer in Dallas. I think they could go deep.
I think one of the teams, and we didn't mention this, is the other news. There's been so much news coming out. I think the Titans would have had a shot. It had Derrick Henry not been lost for the season. They beat the Bills. I think they legitimately beat the Bills.
Well, Josh Allen slipped.
Yeah, sure. But still, I mean, that was a legitimate win. It wasn't like a
flip. It was a great game.
It was a really good game. And of course, Derrick Henry goes out the week that they play the Rams. Of course. But anyway, that team ended up being, they were not playing that well when we played them, but they've really turned it on.
All right. That's it for Patreon questions.
Okay. So go into this weekend without a Seahawks game on the docket. Is there any game you guys are going to be watching closely this weekend? You guys don't even know who's playing, do you?
No, I have no idea.
Well, the NFC West games I always pay very close attention to. I think that those games, but they're just, I mean, the 49ers play the Cardinals this weekend, so that'll be interesting to see what happens there. But
yeah, I was kind of curious. I watched the beginning of that Bears 49ers game, and man, it looked like Justin Fields was going to stick it to him. And then, it sucked that the 49ers came back and won that game. But yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God. The Dolphins play the Texans this week.
Oh man.
Yeah. The worst game
for me, though, there really isn't. I think that sums up how I feel about the Seahawks. If the Seahawks were 5-3 and I was really angling for a playoff spot, or I really thought that they were going to have to worry about the Rams. I'd be focusing on those games, but I really just don't feel that for the Seahawks. And until they get to that point, I don't really worry about what other teams are doing. Like, a lot of people were very upset when the Rams got Von Miller. And this was last year when the Seahawks and Rams were fighting for that division, and a trade like that to push them over the edge. I would have been furious. I barely even blinked. Like, I think that sums up where I'm at as a Seahawks fan right now. I just don't think much of their chances, so I'm not too worried about the rest of the NFC. So honestly, there isn't a game that kind of piques my interest.
I think that's well said. Before we go, I did want to ask you guys one question on that front. If the news had broke, actually, the Seahawks had traded for Von Miller and they traded their second and third round pick next year, and then they wouldn't have a pick until the fourth round or whatever, how would you have felt?
So mad.
Yeah.
I'd be really, really mad. And I'm mad that the Rams did it, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been happy about it either, just because this team isn't missing just a Von Miller to win a Super Bowl. You know, maybe the Rams are just missing a Von Miller to win the Super Bowl, but Seattle's not there. So it would have been illogical, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have been downright reckless. The Seahawks are already missing their first round pick this year. I think what the Rams paid was pretty wild, considering he's a free agent after the year. Frankly, he hasn't played that well. I think I get it why the Rams did it. He's injured. He like guaranteed a bunch of sacks a couple weeks ago against Case Keenum, who didn't even get near the quarterback. I think it's a great trade for the Rams for where they're at, but for the Seahawks are at, where we talk about the influx of talent they need, the failed draft picks, to do that trade for a rental player to slide into it, that would have been downright reckless. I think that would have been a fireable offense, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're all in the same place there. All right, well, Seahawks go into the bye week off of a win, hopefully getting healthy, maybe getting our franchise quarterback back on the field, maybe getting our top pick on the field finally, maybe getting our starting running back on the field. Yeah, and we didn't really talk about Trey Brown much, but you know, another ascending player, hopefully continuing his ascent. And so some things to look forward to regardless of where the season's going to go. And Evan will be at that Packers game. So everybody should be hoping that the Seahawks destroy the Packers in that game and that Aaron Rodgers doesn't play, or that he does and the Seahawks still win, because it could get really, there could be a lot of content. Let's just say that. Depending on how that goes. All right. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Please give the show a quick thumbs up. Doesn't take more than a second. Click subscribe, click the bell to get notified when we go live, and go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger. Get immediate access to our Slack channel, where we've got hundreds of folks in our community. It's a really good crew, really good conversations. Even when we're not here, you got to celebrate, commiserate, whatever the situation calls for, you're going to have folks over there. And you get some Patreon questions that we will answer on the show. So until next time, take care, everybody.